Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart. June is Grand Canyon month at Real Science Radio. We have two videos on the canyon's formation that you may want to see that we'll be talking about. Our special guest for this series is the producer of the newest of the two. Brian Nickel is a mechanical engineer, and that is a well-suited discipline. As we saw in our 2017 interview, when Brian helped to correct a geologist who was telling a story as opposed to dealing with the actual physics involved in tectonic activities, such as elastic strain in a form of potential energy known as strain energy and kinetic energy and stress concentration, all of which help us understand why materials, including crustal materials, will often fail in a linear fashion, which is why you have fault lines. And with the global flood, think about the global flood. A crack opened up and encircled the earth, and as it eroded away the crust, the mantle rock below the crack buckled upward, and that's why there is a crack that today circles the earth more than 40,000 miles long, like the seam on a baseball, the crack that we call the mid-oceanic ridge. So you'll see for yourself Brian's expertise on the topic. June is Grand Canyon month at Real Science Radio. So we'll cover first the problems with the river formed the canyon. And then we'll cover the problems with the flood formed the canyon. It's going to be so interesting. Then we'll look at the Grand Canyon's initial conditions, the formation of the canyon's major features. What a great month this will be. So to discuss this list of problems with the river carved the canyon, Brian Nickel. Brian, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Thank you, Bob. It's good to be back.
And congratulations for this accomplishment, not only to produce this stunning video you have on the canyon, but also because Dr. Walt Brown, the author of the hydroplate theory, has linked to your video from the top of his Grand Canyon chapter at creationscience.com. So that's just awesome. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's nice to be able to work with Walt and see a lot of the things that he has predicted coming true literally as time goes by right before our eyes.
Yeah, it's so exciting. We summarize a lot of that on our website at rsr.org/predictions, and we link directly to Walt Brown's predictions.
Yeah, one of the things, Bob, that Walt has in his book is a quote from an author who wrote a book on the Grand Canyon. His name was Wayne Rainey, and the title of his book is called Carving the Grand Canyon, Evidence, Theories, and Mystery. Mm. And Wayne states in his book as follows, though scientists have studied the canyon for more than 150 years, a definitive answer as to how or when the canyon formed eludes them. One thing scientists do agree on is that the canyon was carved by the erosive power of the Colorado River. But the river itself has carried away the evidence of this earlier history.
Okay.
So I just find that an amazingly telling quote of their confidence in their conclusion, but they don't have evidence.
Yes. So Wayne Rainey, this was published by the Grand Canyon Association in 2005. And that author, Rainey, he's also acknowledged that there is, quote, no single scientific theory regarding the Grand Canyon's origin, and that the canyon's birth remains, quote, a hazy mystery cloaked in intrigue and filled with enigmatic puzzles. So, Brian, if the river carried away the evidence of how it could carve the canyon, That means, and it's true, we know, the audience will hear this as we continue, there is no evidence that the river carved the canyon, yet that's the canonical story that has to be accepted by the old earthers.
Exactly. I mean, that's the doctrine that you are fed when you go to the South Rim and visit the Grand Canyon Visitor Center. Everything is all about how the river carved the canyon, and yet when you start to look at it technically, it really becomes a very weak theory.
So preparing for this program, Brian and I have both created our own list of problems with the claim, taken as blind faith by many, that the river carved the canyon. Brian, your list is more, how should I put it, more intellectual, more technical than mine. You're an engineer, right? I'm just a radio talk show host. So how about we both give the bullet points of what's in our list, and then we dig into them. Will that work?
That sounds good.
Okay, so here are my bullet points for our list of problems with the river carved the canyon. Number one, none of the other major rivers of the world have carved anything like a Grand Canyon. Number two, rivers don't do this. They don't dig deeper and deeper into their beds. Number three, rivers don't flow uphill, which the Colorado River would have had to do. Number four, the side canyons, dozens of huge side canyons. If the Colorado River carved the Grand Canyon, what carved all those massive side canyons? Number five, the spires and other irregular features like narrow ridges and walls that gradual erosion would have destroyed while the river was carving the canyon. Number six, the denudation. That's the enormous volume of rock from far above the canyon that's all been cleared away, excavated away, which you have to explain before you can even begin to understand what carved the canyon. Number seven, the series of barb canyons, which are backward flowing canyons, side canyons in Marble Canyon leading into the Grand Canyon. Number eight, the wildly downward curved, smoothly bent arched layers of rock in the barb canyons. It's something to behold. And number nine, there is dramatically more erosion on the north side of the river than on the south side, and much longer side canyons on the north than the south. So, Brian, that's my bullet point list of problems with the river carved the canyon.
That's a pretty extensive list, Bob. Thanks for that. It'll be great to talk through those. My list has some similarities. For me, the problems with the river formed the canyon theory is, number one, the inner gorge, the existence of the 46-mile-long inner gorge of the canyon presents, I believe, a problem.
The inner gorge, that it's more than 1,000 feet deep, right? So that, the inner gorge, okay.
Yes. The inner gorge at the deepest spot is 1,200 feet deep, carved into solid rock.
And so that's in the middle of the canyon down at the base. It's like a deeper gorge inside the canyon. Okay. So that's a great example of a problem.
And the thing about the gorge is that it is not sedimentary rock. It is solid crystalline rock that's harder than sedimentary rock that the river is supposed to have cut into. Mm. And we can get into that, but that really presents a problem for a river carving through that.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. Okay.
Staying at a high level, though, the second issue I think is a problem for the river cut the canyon is that the Grand Canyon faults are all perpendicular to the Colorado River's flow, especially when looking at the inner gorge. There is no fault that follows along the inner gorge that might give the river an opportunity to open up and cut the inner gorge.
So you're talking about geologic faults? In other words, they don't run along the path of the Grand Canyon or the Colorado River. You said they're perpendicular to the river?
That's right.
Okay. That'll be good to talk through. All right.
And then, as you mentioned, side canyons are very long and very deep in the Grand Canyon. Mm. And those side canyons run perpendicular to the Colorado's flow and open up as many as some are 11 miles deep. Others, Havasu fault has a canyon in it that is perpendicular to the Grand Canyon, and that is over 30 miles long.
Oh, my. Wow. That's going to be fascinating to talk through those. Okay, do you have a few more in your list?
Also, uphill topography of the surrounding area that the river has supposedly cut through. All the topography as you flow westward out of Marble Canyon on the Colorado River, all the topography above rises uphill. So the river would have had to have cut uphill, and explaining that, I think, is problematic.
Right, exactly. We could talk about the explanation given, but that'll be fun. Okay, and I think you have a few more on your list here. So intergorge, perpendicular faults, your list is a bit more technical than my list, and I like it, Brian. It's good.
Well, we'll see about how technical. I believe it, from a physics standpoint, I believe it has all of the things I would want to cover in looking at it from a mechanics viewpoint.
Okay, super. Now, Brian, the list of problems with the idea that the Colorado River could have formed the Grand Canyon. So as we get into detail now, beginning with my list, this is going to be so much fun. But Brian, this is still the primary mainstream explanation for the origin of the Grand Canyon. Is that true?
Yeah. Like I said, anybody who visits the canyon, it gets a heavy dose of dogma that the river cut the canyon.
Okay. That it was carved over hundreds of millions of years by the mighty Colorado River. So my first problem, none of the other major rivers of the world have carved anything like a Grand Canyon. Now, when I state that, are there Grand Canyons around the world that you know of that would mean that I'm wrong here?
No, I think that the reason the Grand Canyon is called the Grand Canyon is because it is wholly unique in its location and position so high on a plateau.
Oh, yeah. And it's one of the seven wonders of the world. There are not like 78 wonders of the world, and 30 of them are canyons carved by rivers. It's one of the seven wonders of the world. It's 277 miles long, and it has 800 cubic miles of rock excavated, carved out of this enormous canyon. And so that's my first piece of evidence. The problem with the river carved the canyon is that the other rivers of the world, none of them have done this. So this is not the kind of thing that rivers tend to do.
That's correct.
Okay, so then my second problem with the river carved the canyon is that rivers don't dig deeper and deeper into their beds. I mean, are there rivers all over the world where the river banks are 2,000 feet deep, 3,000 feet deep, 4,000 feet deep? And it's another version of number one. But if we're searching for a great river somewhere in the world that might cut the grandest canyon, would you pick the Colorado River?
No, I don't think anybody would if they were selecting a river for cutting a big, deep canyon. By all categories of flow rate and speed and removal, the Colorado River doesn't rank in the top 10 of any list, and anybody can go on the internet and do a search to see those rates, and the Colorado River will not show up on their list.
I just jotted down a few details about the Colorado, the Mississippi, the Nile, and the Amazon. And so you just pointed out that the Colorado River, it's not the biggest, it's not the fastest, it's not the most volume. At its deepest, it's 85 feet deep. It is 1,400 miles long. That's pretty cool. But its discharge. It doesn't even make Wikipedia's list of the world's greatest rivers by discharge, that is, by the volume of their flow. Brian, they list 140 rivers. 140. And if you take the river with the least discharge of those 140 rivers, so it's the last one on the list, and you divide its volume by four, then you get the Colorado River. The Colorado River is one quarter of that least of the world's top 140 rivers. The vast majority of them, most people have never even heard of, most people couldn't even pronounce, and yet none of them have carved a Grand Canyon.
It's just amazing.
My third problem with the river carved the canyon is, and this was on your list, rivers don't flow uphill. So for somebody listening and they don't have a topographical map in front of them, I mean, Google Earth is such a powerful tool. It's a creationist best friend. But if you picture the Colorado River flowing toward the Grand Canyon, Brian, maybe then you could describe the terrain that it would have had in front of it before it started carving the canyon.
Right. So before the Marble Canyon would have been carved by the river, had that happened, the plain that Marble Canyon sits under is all uphill as you head west toward the Kaibab Plateau. And so it rises uphill the entire distance all the way to the Kaibab Plateau. Then when you reach the Kaibab Plateau, you realize that now there is an upwarp in the topography that rises steeply another 2,000 feet above where you just came from on the Marble Canyon top layers. Mm. So it is an uphill battle literally all the way as you head west.
And rivers don't flow uphill. So the just so explanation given, typically the general public, they're not told about these problems typically. Folks don't know. They think the case for the river carving the canyon is open and shut. No one would ever question it, even though the world's leading experts say there's no evidence that the river carved the canyon. We have no idea how it would have carved the canyon, but we do all agree the river did carve the canyon.
Right, right. It's very circular reasoning, and it's appalling that such an average river would cut through all that hardened rock with seemingly such impunity. Mm. And we're told that that's what happened, though. One thing I point out in my video is that this river cut the canyon idea is really only accepted passively when you're not exposed to all of the other surrounding evidence. And so in this Grand Canyon video I just released on YouTube, it tries to point out some of these very large features that even if you were to rent a helicopter or an aircraft and fly over the Grand Canyon, you still would not be able to see some of the details that I think give much better evidence for how the canyon formed originally.
Yes, and that's going to be really fun to talk through that. So the uniformitarian geologist, the guy who thinks everything happened gradually over millions of years, they have this problem where they have to explain because rivers don't flow uphill. So let me give an analogy with a different kind of problem called the cool young sun. If the solar system was formed by a condensing gas nebula cloud, formed the sun and the planets, well, the sun would be a lot cooler than it is now for its first hundreds of millions of years. And that would mean the Earth would be like an ice cube, and any oceans on the surface of the Earth would be frozen solid if the sun were cool. So there's a just-so story told that the Earth's atmosphere changed as the sun heated up. The Earth's atmosphere changed to retain more and more heat. And the hotter the sun got, the greater the change in the Earth's atmosphere. And they both happened in parallel without any feedback mechanisms. There's no cause and effect here. They just both happened at the same time over hundreds of millions of years. That's called a just-so story. And secular origins requires 1,000 just-so stories. So here at the Grand Canyon, it's another just-so story as the Colorado Plateau was lifting up over tens of millions of years. The Colorado River was cutting into it at the exact same rate over tens of millions of years. That's too much of a wild claim.
It's very evident, I think, when we look at the mechanisms that you have to have a lot of dial turning and knob turning to get the variables just right to make your conclusion fit what we see. And in developing a theory, we shouldn't have to do that. If the theory's basis is good, then it should be predictive and reveal through physics-based mechanisms the end result, rather than a bunch of just so knob turning.
Yes, and then it should explain many other problems that it wasn't even trying to solve. And in fact, your video of the origin of the Grand Canyon based on the hydroplate theory, your video does exactly that. It shows how Walt Brown's hydroplate theory helps us understand not only the Grand Canyon, but these extraordinary geological features that lie to the north and to the east of the Grand Canyon. So then, Brian, my fourth problem with the River Cut the Canyon are the side canyons. You and I both mentioned these. The Grand Canyon, 277 miles long, it has dozens of massive side canyons. And if the Colorado River carved the Grand Canyon, well, rivers don't normally take abrupt right-hand and left-hand turns, you know, and they flow 5 miles, 10 miles, and come right back on themselves and keep flowing and then make a left turn in a road 5 miles, three miles, 2 miles, come right back, keep going, make a right-hand turn, a road 8 miles, come back. They don't do that. There is no possible way that the Colorado River formed the side canyons. So then if the Colorado River didn't do it, and the side canyons are so enormous, some of the more well-known ones are North Canyon, Nautiloid Canyon, Buck Farm Canyon, Carbon Canyon, Monument Creek, Blacktail Canyon, Tapedes Creek, Havasu Creek. Some are as long as 10 miles or more. So if it's obvious that the Colorado River could not have formed these side canyons, Brian, for the geologists who say the river carved the canyon, how in the world do they say that the side canyons formed? It seems that they have absolutely no answer for these massive side canyons.
What you'll find is that so much of the theory of the river cut the canyon is dependent upon a great deal of time and imagination for the reviewer to use. And so with these side canyons, there is no good mechanism provided. It's just left to imagination and time.
In fact, in your video, you say time is a variable. It's not a mechanism. I love
that. Yeah, right. That's exactly right. The problem with these side canyons is that they are riverless. And in some cases, these canyons do have some very weak streams that a child could run across, but they are not huge rivers that are described in any way, and they are not in any way like even the Colorado, which we've already shown is very weak as far as its flow rates.
Right.
And so for the Colorado to have cut to its depth under constant flow over 6 million years, it just boggles the mind how these very deep side canyons that are almost to the same depth as the Grand Canyon itself have managed to carve themselves down to a level of the Grand Canyon with no river.
They have no rivers and they have no massive drainage basins. To maintain a river for millions of years, to carve out a 10-mile long, 4,000 feet deeper side canyon, you would need a massive drainage basin and a major river for millions of years, even though we've shown that the river wouldn't do it anyway. But there is no river there. You don't have dozens of rivers all flowing in this arid part of the country into the Grand Canyon. They don't exist.
Yeah, again, this suggests a very different source of water for what did carve the Grand Canyon's many side canyons.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let me read to you a headline. I looked this up, and there's really a dearth of information on how the side canyons were formed, but I did find something on a popular website. It's on TripAdvisor. I love TripAdvisor. It's a really neat tool for people who travel. But the TripAdvisor article for the Grand Canyon, it links to this: amazing view of the canyon with side canyons formed by rivers that feed the Colorado. And I thought, where in the world did they get that?
Well, I guess I can't blame them, because they probably have never thought further than what they've been told as far as how the canyon formed.
Yeah, if they're told that the river formed the canyon, carved the canyon, And they have photos of these awesome, enormous side canyons. So they must think, well, obviously, there must be rivers that carved all the side canyons.
Yeah, it's the only mechanism they've been offered.
Right. Okay, my fifth problem with the river carved the canyon is the spires and other irregular features in the canyon, like narrow ridges and walls. I've hiked into the canyon on a few occasions. There are these very irregular features. They're spires, also called rock pinnacles or rock towers or even rock needles. And if you have an individual column of rock isolated from the other rocks in the shape of a vertical shaft, and you think about water flowing around it for 6 million years, and I think of the different layers, just like they're in the walls of the canyon, they're also in these spires, and the different layers have differing densities, differing resistance to erosion. So whereas a rapid catastrophe often leaves behind rather unique consequences, a steadily flowing river of water over millions of years, it's going to wipe out these spires and these irregular features.
Yeah, the time variable that they rely upon so much as part of their, quote, mechanism for how the canyon formed really fights them on a, when you start looking at a lot of the surface features. Mm. That same time variable is what's eating away and should have rounded off surfaces.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then my sixth problem is the denudation. You mentioned this also. Above the canyon, there's the 800 cubic miles of rock that's been excavated out of the canyon that forms the canyon. But above the canyon, there was a tremendous volume of rock above the rim of the canyon. Could you explain that?
Yeah, there was over 1,000 feet of sediment above the Kaibab limestone. And the Kaibab limestone is the rock deposit. It's a sedimentary rock deposit that you are standing on when you visit the Grand Canyon from either the North Rim or the South Rim. Mm. But when you're standing, looking down into the canyon, you are standing on the Kaibab limestone deposit. And that deposit in the past had been covered up by another 1,000 feet of sediments, but it has all been removed, and it has been removed such a great distance away that it covers about 10,000 square miles of area.
Wow.
And just to get a sense of what 10,000 square miles of area is, that this 1,000 feet of extra sediment has been removed from all around the Grand Canyon, 10,000 square miles is about the size of Massachusetts.
Okay.
Just imagine Massachusetts if it was 1,000 feet lower than its surrounding states. And the explanation for that was, oh, well, this river did it.
Right.
Well, that's just preposterous when you look
right
at the missing layers of the Great Denudation.
So geologists from the USGS or from the National Park Service, mainstream geologists throughout the U.S., Europe, around the world, they agree what you're describing here is not controversial. They agree that there was this massive sedimentary rock above the Grand Canyon. And in this one area, 10,000 square miles, it's a total of 2,000 cubic miles of sedimentary rock was excavated. It was removed before the Grand Canyon is even able to be carved out itself.
Over two times more material was removed before the Grand Canyon was even carved. And so before any theory tries to explain what carved the Grand Canyon, it first needs to explain what took that top 1,000 feet of sediment off the size of the state of Massachusetts. Mm. And took it off so cleanly. How did that happen? There needs to be an explanation of that before we even talk about the Grand Canyon.
While geologists agree that those sedimentary rock layers were above the Kaibab limestone, so above the Grand Canyon, How is it that they know? Why is it not controversial? How do they know that all that rock was up there?
Well, there's several features that are far away from the canyon edge itself, but many who've driven to the south rim of the canyon have driven right by one of those features. It's called Red Butte, and it rises about 1,000 feet above the road that you're on when you're traveling north to the Grand Canyon, mm-hmm. and those are representative of those missing layers. Well, those same layers are also found further north near Page, Arizona, in the Vermilion and Echo Cliff systems.
Oh, I love it, Brian. When we've driven down there and we've driven that exact route but a dozen times, and you look for as far as the eye can see to the north and to the south, and you see these dramatic cliffs and the same exact strata, and you know that it was all filled in. But whatever happened, those cliffs did not erode away. They're still there, the layers there, but everything in between is gone, and there's so much gone that when you add it up, it's 2,000 cubic miles of sedimentary rock gone that was all above the Grand Canyon.
One thing that we see in the Vermilion Cliff System is that even though it's usually seen right near in relation to the Echo Cliff System, the Vermilion Cliff System actually stretches far to the north and to the west, and those same layers are represented all along there. Mm.
Okay, so my seventh problem with the river carved the canyon is the barbed side canyons in Marble Canyon. Brian, I think most folks who listen to a science radio show, I think most people have no idea what a barbed canyon is. That is a big problem with the river carved the canyon. Could you help me explain to the audience this series of barbed canyons?
When a river is flowing and there is erosion, the general pattern of erosion of the drainage basin is in line with the river's direction of flow. In other words, a tributary erosional pattern, and therefore a tributary itself, will enter into the main river's flow at an acute angle. And this is the pattern generally for all drainage systems. It's how things erode.
So in other words, when the Mississippi River is flowing south to the Gulf of Mexico, tributaries flowing into it will generally also be flowing south.
That's right. They will all flow toward the south and enter into the main river at an acute angle.
It would be rather odd if a whole series of them were flowing north and then all of a sudden connected with the Mississippi River that was flowing south. That would be weird. Yet in Marble Canyon, we have a whole series of barbed canyons that cannot be explained by the river carved the canyon.
And so now consider what you see in Marble Canyon, where the Colorado River is flowing to the west, and yet all of these barbed side canyons enter into Marble Canyon and the Colorado River flowing to the east.
Yeah.
And that is extremely odd that they all do that.
Yes. And I love your video, Brian. It's probably the first video in the history of mankind that shows people how the barbed side canyons formed.
I took an especially long time going through that when I was creating the video to formulate both that in my mind and to also convey it to the viewer. And so I really tried to make that as clear as possible. Mm.
And it's ignored, right? All the popular explanations of the Grand Canyon, so many of these details, the side canyons, the barbed canyons, many other details, they're just ignored because the river carved the canyon doesn't explain any of them.
It's easy to do that when you're standing at the Grand Canyon's visitor center and you don't have access to any of the other evidence that shows everything is opposite of what they're trying to tell you.
Yeah, right. So my eighth and final problem with the river carved the canyon is at the barbed canyons, the walls of the barbed canyon, In your video, we see that they are wildly downward curved. They're smoothly bent, arched layers of rock. Brian, where did you get the photos? They're so awesome. About 1 hour into your video of the walls of these barbed canyons.
Well, for years, Walt has provided that photo in his book and on his website. But anyone can go on to Google Earth and look up North Canyon in Arizona, and they can take a tour both down the Colorado River, but they can also take a hike tour up the up into North Canyon using the Google Earth street map tool.
Street view, yeah.
Street view tool. And you can see all the evidence and pictures you want, and you don't even have to leave your chair.
Yeah, I'm so thrilled you put that in your video. So that concludes my list of problems with the river carved the canyon. So, Brian, that's my list, and now we turn to your list of problems with the river carved the canyon.
Well, yeah, actually, Bob, in discussing this, many of your topics and my topics overlap, so I've been able to discuss most of what I had on my list. There's just a couple of other items that might be important to also cover.
Sure, that's great. And now that the listeners have been thinking geology for all this time, I think they're ready to hear these next two items.
Well, let's get to it then. The Inner Gorge that we mentioned previously is a 46-mile-long cut deep into the canyon. And the thing that makes the Inner Gorge different than the rest of the canyon is that it is cut into solid crystalline rock, not sedimentary layer rock. And it cuts about 1,200 feet deep into that solid crystalline rock. Mm. It is very steep and deep, and it has jagged, sharp-edged walls. Hmm. And that is interesting because if you were to go to a rock yard and order river rock, what kind of rock would you be ordering, Bob?
It's going to all be rounded, wonderfully rounded by the flow of the river.
Right. That is a common type of rock, and we know that river flow will round off boulders, and so we expect river rock to be round. Well, if you were to look at the Inner Gorge's walls, they are not rounded, and they do not look like a river has been flowing and cutting into the Inner Gorge's crystalline rock for millions of years. Mm. It is jagged, it's steep, and it's not rounded or dished at all. And that, to me, as a mechanical engineer who's used to looking at failed parts and having to analyze what happened and looking for a mechanism to produce the failure, when I look at jagged, sharp-edged walls, I do not think, oh, well, water has been flowing over this surface for millions of years. So the evidence we see does not fit the story we're told.
Yeah, and
so,
Brian,
the Inner Gorge is a testament to that.
Yeah, the Inner Gorge, like you said, 46 miles long, over 1,000 feet deep into solid rock. I grew up in northern New Jersey. We used to go to Ringwood State Park, and there's, you know, some streams that flow through there. And it's one of my favorite childhood memories, the rocks that you could be running in the stream or a creek from rock to rock, big rounded boulders. You jump from one to the other. If it's covered with moss, you slip, you fall in the water, you catch crawdads and all that stuff. But they're all rounded all over the world. We have gone around the world from New Zealand to the Middle East and Europe, Alaska, Hawaii, where there are rivers, the rocks are rounded. That's what rivers do to rocks. So the walls of the Inner Gorge are the exact opposite of what you would get if it was carved out by the river.
Yeah, water flow would never do that. And anybody can, again, go to Google Earth and take a virtual raft tour down the Colorado using the Street View tool and look at those walls of the Inner Gorge for themselves and see that they are jagged in all spots. And there's just not much there to tell me that those were carved by water.
And then in your video, you point out that in the Inner Gorge, why would the river cut down into solid crystalline rock, hard rock, when it would have flowed elsewhere? If it had to erode something, it would have eroded its banks at the edges. It wouldn't digging into solid crystalline rock.
In nature, mechanisms will take the path of least resistance. And so when the Colorado River, if it was supposedly carving into these sedimentary layers and ever deepening itself over time, as it deepened and cut itself into these sedimentary layers, they were the most easy layers to erode. And so when the Colorado River reached the hard crystalline rock at the bottom of all these sedimentary layers, why would it just choose to slice directly into 1,200 feet of crystalline rock when it had softer, easier to erode sedimentary layers to erode sideways?
Right.
It just doesn't make any sense, especially when there is no fault that parallels the Colorado River that would have helped it.
Is there a fault just in the inner gorge that would parallel the inner gorge?
No, there's nothing. There's nothing. The faults that are on the Colorado Plateau, they all cross perpendicular to the river's flow.
Wow.
So there's nothing really there to help it.
Hmm. Okay, and then when a river is flowing, the sediments at the bottom of the river, they protect any rock beneath the sediments so that rivers don't forever dig deeper and deeper and deeper into their beds. So at the bottom of the inner gorge, aren't there sediments that would have prevented the gorge itself from being excavated?
Yes, that's one of the main problems for trying to explain or to convince me of why the Colorado River would have cut into the inner gorge. Those sediments would have protected the inner gorge from the Colorado River's flow and any erosive power that it might have. If you think about the Colorado River, if it's the mechanism and the Colorado River is a saw blade, but your saw blade is all gummed up with some sort of, you know, waxy material or something in there that's preventing the teeth of the saw blade from cutting into a piece of wood, for instance, then no matter how much that saw blade runs on the surface of the wood, it can't cut in until those teeth are exposed. And so in the same way, all those sediments and huge boulders that are filling the bottom of the Colorado River, around 75 feet deep of sediments, until those sediments move relative to the inner gorge walls, then there's no mechanism for cutting into and deepening the inner gorge.
From cutting out below the sediments, even when there's a flash flood, you're not going to remove the boulders that are down there, huge boulders. And like you just said, Brian, 75 feet thick of sediments, there's no way to get below the sediments to continue to excavate the gorge deeper and deeper. And the gorge itself was not carved out by water because the walls are jagged and sharp. They're not rounded.
That's right. And in my video, I go on to explain a very different mechanism, a surprising mechanism, for how the inner gorge was torn in two and has such steep, jagged features.
Oh, that's so great. I can't wait till we get to that. And before that, we'll have to do in part two, problems with the flood carved the canyon. Because there are many creationists who assume that the global flood, the runoff waters of the global flood, carved the Grand Canyon. That's got problems too, that the hydroplate theory can solve. So I can't wait, Brian. What an honor that you're joining us. Your video on the origin of the Grand Canyon is fantastic. We'll both embed it into today's show summary, and people could find it on your YouTube channel, Brian Nickel Hydroplate YouTube channel. But then also here at Bob and Yurt Live on our store, we will sell Brian's video along with a video by Mike Snavely, Grand Canyon, The Puzzle on the Plateau. So we're going to include both videos and our Grand Canyon RSR series all in one set. So you can get that on Blu-ray, on DVD, or go right to rsr.org/Grand Canyon and you can see it right there. Brian, these resources are tremendous. And I think people will love to learn how the Grand Canyon was actually formed.
Yeah, I think that Mike Snavely's work on the Grand Canyon, I believe he calls it The Puzzle on the Plateau, it does a really good job of explaining in easy detail how the Grand Canyon formed and pointing out a lot of the issues we brought up today.
Yes, I think Mike's video, the way I view it, and I toured with Walt Brown, Walt and Peggy Brown, Mike Snavely, Kevin Lee, so many awesome creationists. We toured the Grand Canyon and all the major geological sites that were all formed at the same time. And the way I view Mike Snavely's video is that it's an introductory video to help people understand the concepts. And then your video comes along and really adds the scientific and the physics explanations. So you get the overview from Mike, and then, wow, Brian Nickel, as a mechanical engineer, the same discipline as Dr. Walt Brown, then people really understand the mechanisms with your video. So thank you so much for producing it and for joining us here on Real Science Radio.
Thank you, Bob. It was great to talk with you about this very important subject.
Yes, I appreciate that, and I can't wait to part two. So until then, this is Bob Enyart for Fred Williams and Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.